Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And that day is Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. Wendy Wilson will be joining us in for the first segment of the program today, so please stay tuned. And first, we're going to get to the market report after I say good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, today gold was down 8.50 at 11.68.30. Silver, a little more pressure on silver, down 0.21, 15.79. I think that followed the other white metals. Platinum was down 17 at 1,007. Palladium was down 19, almost 3% at 6.79. You have the USDX today. I didn't look at this today, 0.17, back up over 95. 95.03. Crude oil got beat today, down 1.04 at 45.25. And the paper markets today, let me bring that up. A little pressure, no big deal. Dow down 47 points, 17,169. NASDAQ down 40, 48.40. S&P down 11 at 2018. The 10-year yield, 2.3%, down a little bit. The euro, same thing. It's interesting. Usually the euro, if the dollar is, the euro is 113, down 0.08. And European markets, the biggest mover was Japan, up almost 2% at 353 points. And that's it for the market report today. And I do believe we have Wendy Wilson on the line from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about fatigue. Chronic fatigue is on the rise these days. And according to the CDC, we have anywhere from 500,000 to 1 million Americans that complain about having chronic fatigue. And, you know, it's so prevalent. Modern medicine has several names for it now. One is chronic fatigue syndrome. The other one is myalgic encephalomyelitis, and then systemic exertion intolerance disease. Apparently, more women than men seem to suffer from chronic fatigue, but they think the condition is underreported when it comes to the male sex. Now, age onset is between 40 to 59. And you know what? The disease really didn't get a medical classification until 1969 because doctors all thought it was in their patient's head and put them on antidepressants. But apparently some of the symptoms, if you may recognize chronic fatigue, you have muscle pain, memory problems, headaches, joint pain, sleep disorders, sore throat, and tender glands lasting more than 6 months. So if that's you, that'll land you with a diagnosis of chronic fatigue in a skinny minute. Now, researchers are suggesting the condition can be accompanied by having the flu. And that gets me wondering about, you know, is there a spike, some sort of correlation in chronic fatigue after everybody gets a seasonal flu shot? Ever wonder about that, Al?
Not until today, but I'm wondering about it now.
Well, the other thing they correlate with chronic fatigue onset is excessive stress. And actually your symptoms of chronic fatigue can mimic the flu, and sometimes people get misdiagnosed. So now if you ask your medical doctor, what's the cause of chronic fatigue, they're going to admit they just don't know. So if your doctor has no clue what the cause is, then you'll be put on a course of symptom reduction care with no resolution in sight. So your doctor's not going to lose sleep over that because Al, Melody, he'll be too busy adding up the average cost of your treatments. Office visits range from $50 to $200, depending if you have insurance. Then you're referred to specialists as well, adding up the fees. Treatments increase over the course of your condition, so you're going to have physical therapy, and sessions range from $50 to $350 a session. Also, cognitive behavioral therapy, probably because they want you to, you know, just get comfortable living with your disease. So those treatments are $125 to $250 a session. Then there's drug therapy, the antidepressants, anywhere from $8 to $90 per prescription. Now, according to the University of Maryland, their medical center, they said cognitive behavioral therapy will entail a minimum of 6 to 20 hours of treatment, anywhere from $750 to $5,000. So anybody with chronic fatigue who seeks help from modern medicine is going to receive drugs for pain, drugs for sleep, drugs for depression, and referrals to therapy clinics. So obviously,
I can see why they need the drugs for depression, because when you look at your medical bills, that's going to be very depressing for a lot of people. So.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, medicine says there's no cure. Obviously, if you can't identify the cause, the cure will elude you. Okay. Now, modern medicine reports chronic fatigue can be accompanied by other conditions like fibromyalgia, vertigo, intense allergies, irritable bowel syndrome, night sweats and chills, blurred vision, also sensitivity to light, eye pain, anxiety, and panic attacks. Now, cognitive perception and reasoning is also affected with folks with chronic fatigue, but it's not considered dementia. And also, over half the patients with chronic fatigue will get a diagnosis of fibromyalgia within the second year of being originally diagnosed. So there is a reason for that. Fibromyalgia is a sister condition for chronic fatigue, and when you address the chronic fatigue, you get rid of the fibromyalgia too. And we're going to talk about how you do that. Now, according to modern medicine, chronic fatigue is complex. Right? Researchers at DePaul University in Chicago and their Healthcare for Women International group, guess what they did, Al, Melanie? They conducted a study on the mortality of chronic fatigue. The patient study sampled 166 deceased chronic fatigue patients, and it, of course, more women were in that batch than men. They also found patients with chronic fatigue were more likely to die of heart failure, cancer, and suicide by 59.6%. They also found the average age of the chronic fatigue patient who did die of cancer or suicide was much younger than the general population, ranging from 39 to 47 years of age. So the medical literature knows that chronic fatigue has a high risk of mortality, but they haven't really been doing any extensive investigations to the matter. And the reason is because medicine for a long time thought chronic fatigue was a psychiatric condition. And health professionals are kind of split on this issue, whether the chronic fatigue is the cause of death or if it's a secondary condition. But most medical examiners will list the secondary condition as the cause of death. Here's an expert, Dr. Sarah Mayhill. She's a physician in the UK, She says, chronic fatigue or feeling tired all the time is evidence that the powerhouses of your cells are not supplying you with enough energy. The problem is not in your head, and it's not your thyroid. End of quote. So what it is in a nutshell, you've got a digestive imbalance, and we're going to talk about how you can fix that. Because according to medicine, there's lots of reasons why you're tired. You could have a thyroid issue, a heart problem, insomnia, depression, pulmonary disease. But, you know, chronic fatigue is not at the top of your doctor's list when you come in and complain of long-term fatigue. Most doctors never consider that there's this physical disruption or a roadblock, if you will, with the body successfully converting fuel for energy into the cells. And as Dr. Mayhill advises her patients, she says, change your lifestyle, because the treatments which medicine offer you is really a Band-Aid on this serious metabolism issue. Do you know anybody with chronic fatigue, Al?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of the symptoms you've described sound like a natural part of aging. If they can't tell for sure what's going on here, I'm not sure that they aren't elderly people aren't walking in and say, I've got joint pain. Well, yeah, a lot of elderly people have that. Or at least a percentage of them do. Do they just say, oh, that's chronic fatigue syndrome?
Yeah, but I mean,
is it a kind of grab bag where we just, any symptom you have, and if you're tired, well, listen, you know, you get tired as you get older. You don't get more alert.
You know, yeah, but 40-year-olds,
speak for yourself.
40-year-olds, come on, you know, hey, if you look in the Bible, Moses was still, you know, doing his thing, and his eyes weren't dim, and he was, you know, near 100. So, you know, we're not supposed to be like this, Al. Now,
I agree we're not supposed to, but I'm just wondering how much of it is just a, you know, if they don't know what the cause is, how many times do they diagnose it incorrectly?
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, here's the thing. If you're suffering from chronic fatigue, what it is you have to make a serious effort to address the type of nutrition going into the system. Now, most people think that they eat pretty healthy, but if they started to take an inventory of the food in their home, they'd probably discover hundreds of assassins that are in their food products that they're buying. So the first thing is, you know, stop poisoning yourself with that stuff and replace it with some organic nutrition. And then you would do well to do some organ cleansing. We'll get to that in a minute. So when you're dealing with chronic fatigue, what it is a malfunction in the digestive system, not being able to convert enough protein to amino acids to fuel the cells, the mitochondria part of your cell. So when you do your bowel cleansing and your lifestyle adjustment, that's where I would start. So lifestyle adjustment needs to remove all your processed foods, all your carbohydrates, all your sugar, all your alcohol. And if you're eating red meat, eat grass-fed meat. There's more amino acids and enzymes in grass-fed meat. So the food change will actually starve an overgrowth of yeast that's in the bowel that's preventing the proper assimilation of your food. Okay? So you've got too much alkalinity in the system, and you know, people are consume a lot of dairy products, even hidden dairy, and they need to really watch that, because an alkaline environment is where yeast will thrive in. So,
and you're talking about an alkaline environment in your digestive tract. You're not talking about an alkaline environment in the flesh of your body. Am I understanding that correctly or not?
Right. It's in the bowel system. Right.
Okay.
That's where all the food gets assimilated, and you use it for fuel. Now, few people realize, you know, a big portion of our energy, 75% of it, it goes to keeping your heart beating, your brain thinking, and your filtering organs filtering. So if you're not putting sufficient nutrition in the system to run those functions, well, then you're not going to have enough energy to go to work or to school. So there's a deficit there. So, what you could do is do some food swapping. A few adjustments go a long way to energize your system. Instead of eating those carbohydrates, which encourage fatigue, even in healthy people, that's what it does. You want to eat some healthy fats like nuts and seeds instead. So fruits, vegetables, fish, nuts, seeds contain these long chain fats that will help to rebuild cell membranes. And then meats, olive oil, coconut milk instead of cow's milk, offer medium chain fats, and help to digest vegetables and convert those to proteins like amino acids. So avoid the soda, avoid the dairy, avoid the grains, the yeast, all those products, which tend to promote irritable bowel syndrome and dysfunction and chronic fatigue issues down the road. So scratch the starch, okay? Forget the prepackaged stuff. Also, fermented foods, Al and Melody, will help remove that over-alkaline environment in your gut, make it harder for yeast to block that protein absorption, and helps to stabilize the floras. So you would add foods like sauerkraut, pickled beets, and kimchi, which is fermented vegetables, which will help. It's a little bit more acidy, but it helps to balance those pHs down there. And that's going to go a long way for energy production.
All right. Well,
okay.
Do we have any deficiencies, like mineral deficiencies, that are going to contribute to this?
Well, obviously,
or do we know about it? Is it something we know about?
Well, you're going to have deficiencies across the board. You're going to have vitamin, mineral, amino acid, protein deficiency. That's why you're kind of, you know, dragging yourself around. So if you don't have that assimilation, you don't have that assimilation.
You're saying that the problem isn't necessarily that we're not consuming, not eating enough minerals and whatever else we need. You're saying the problem is one of absorption caused by the yeast, which prevents the minerals from being absorbed or whatever.
Right.
Am I understanding correctly?
Yep. Yeah, it's really a hindrance. It's the body's not able to uptake and draw and assimilate anything of any kind of margin where you would go past that 75% requirement. So, you know, you just start with your digestive herbs. You start with your bowel cleansing, adjusting the lifestyle. And you know what? You know, you've got more power to correct chronic fatigue issue than any medical doctor. You know, I'm convinced MD means managed disease. That's what I think it is. I don't think it means medical doctor.
I think it had something to do with billing procedure. I think it's an accounting. I think it's an accounting term, but I'm not sure what it means. I think it means there's more money in pills than there is in health.
I know. Well, I mean, we have the bowel cleanses, the digestive herbs. If people worry about things like the heart issue, the cancer issue, there's herbs for that as well. And we have them online at thepowerherbs.com. Or they can just give us a call and ask for a free product catalog. And that number is toll-free at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. Or go online at thepowerherbs.com and check us out. If you have questions, just give us a call.
All right, Wendy.
I almost forgot, Al. 15% off. We've got a sale. 15% off 50 orders, 50 or more through Saturday this week. So it expires the 24th.
50 or more what? 50 or more dollars?
Yeah. Orders 50 or more, you get 15% off. If you're shopping online, the code for that's on the homepage. It's pumpkin number 5.
Before you go, we've still got a minute or two left. What do you think about fasting?
Fasting is really an ancient way of doing a cleanse. Did you know that?
Yeah, I think I understood that. Part of the reason I asked is because I just saw a report yesterday that someone has determined that by fasting, you actually induce your body to create more stem cells, and you are better able to fight off diseases like cancer. And they now have clinical evidence to support that, according to the study at least. And I was just curious what you had to say about fasting. And
it turns out
this isn't just a little game. This is serious stuff. I mean, if you can fast, you can maintain your health much longer period of time.
Yeah, well, there was a reason for that. You know, the ancients knew all about that. You do a mini fast every day. You know, you don't eat all night while you sleep, and you get up and you have breakfast, breaking the fast, breakfast. But if you don't have food or water for 24 hours sunset to sunset, whatever it is, it gives your vital organs a break. All those organs have to, you know, manufacture hormones and digestive enzymes and all the stuff to handle solid foods, and it takes a lot of energy to do that. So actually when you fast, you'll have more energy because all that energy to deal with food can go to something else.
Mm-hmm. All right, Wendy, thank you very much. Appreciate the information. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. Phone number is 866-229-3663, and there's a 15% sale for any orders over $50. Give Wendy a call, 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We have a little special going today. We have a small fractional piece of gold, a 1/4 ounce American Gold Eagle. That is 1/4 ounce American Gold Eagle. You will receive one of those. And we do have some 90% silver in, $25 face value. These are the quarters, so you would receive 100 coins. That's $25 face value. 100 quarters, and the total package, this also includes your shipping cost, so it's out the door, $695, $695, and just call our office, and we have a little, just depends on how long that 90% lasts, but it's pretty much, if you want 10 packages, no problem, if you want 20, no problem, if you want 100, should be no problem. But give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And folks, make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to the program direct from our website, the radio page, and also the archives are listed there. So.
All right, we got some bad news, Melody.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Joe Biden announces that he won't be running for president.
Oh, boo.
Mm-hmm. Try to be brave. Ending months of speculation, Vice President Joseph Biden announced Wednesday that he wouldn't seek the Democratic nomination for president in 2016, removing a potential threat to frontrunner Hillary Rodham Clinton, even as he scolded her for partisanship. Unfortunately, I believe we're out of time. The time necessary to mount a winning campaign for nomination.
Isn't that pathetic? Isn't that pathetic? It takes a whole 2 years to be prepared to run for president? Go ahead.
Is his ultimate excuse is that the grief over losing his son just deprived him of time and energy necessary to prepare. That's what the... That's the justification and excuse. That's certainly at least part of the truth. I don't know if it's everything, but you know, I look at it and I think, yeah, this is maybe just as well. If it takes Joe 6 months to decide whether he will run or he won't, I'm not sure that I'd want him in charge of the red button in the event of an enemy attack. I mean, he could be sitting there debating, I will push the red button, I won't push the red button, I will, I won't. In any case, Joe Biden's finally out of the presidential race, unless another Democrat enters within the next 2 months. The only viable Democrat contenders will be Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. So what do you think? How do the Democrats view their choices between Hillary, who wants to be in the White House but maybe belongs in the big house, and Bernie, who is an avowed socialist? Do you think they view this choice with resignation? I'm talking about Democrats. Do they view the choice with resignation, with apathy, with fear? Or do you think they're excited? They see it with excitement. Oh, boy, these are two hot contenders. What do you think?
And I really don't know. I mean, it's really sort of bizarre, you know, that whole, and I believe this time around a Republican will be elected. You know, I do believe that these positions are fairly well, fairly well directed prior to everything. And, you know, there was a report, a poll out today that it did actually show, Trump as being, you know, a high percentage, being the, winning the nomination.
High percentage of the Republicans are now
high percentage
leading.
Of their, yeah.
Yeah, the plurality, not the majority, but he is more than mm-hmm. anyone else within the Republican rank and file. They say, I think Trump's going to win.
But we're still a year away, and a lot of things are going to change. And when all these Republicans drop away, where is their support going to go to? They're not going to support Trump. They're going to support Bush. So, again, is it going to be the status?
I don't know that that's true.
Well, the only one that might not would be Cruz. You know, they kind of sort of have a little bit of a love affair going on. But
a handful of politicians may decide to support Jeb rather than Donald. That may be true. But I'm not convinced that they're going to bring much of a constituency along with them.
It's the establishment. It is what it is. And, you know, that's how I think you're going to see it, you know. But we'll have to wait and see. I mean, we're a whole year away. But the Democrats, it's just, I'll tell you what, if Hillary actually gets elected as president of the United States, I would consider leaving the U.S. Although.
Could move to Detroit.
Although if she actually would be elected, I would think this system would fall so fast that,
It's hard to say what would happen. I mean, the whole thing becomes just more and more astonishing every day.
If people think Obama is bad, wait till Hillary gets in there. And then you haven't seen anything yet. And this report came out today. I don't know if many people remember the Whitewater situation back in the 90s when Bill Clinton, her husband, was accused of series of illegal loans that were provided to this Whitewater Corporation. It was a real estate venture. And Clinton herself, Hillary, was suspected of creating false documents to conceal an illegal $300,000 loan to this doomed corporation from federal investigators. Well, there is, and she concealed her role in this whole thing. Well, there is this group, there's a conservative watchdog group, Judicial Watch. They're suing the National Archives and Records Administration to obtain copies of a 20-year-old draft indictment against Hillary for her role in this scandal, in this Whitewater scandal. And Obama, the Obama administration, is refusing to release these records because they have this concern for Hillary Clinton's privacy. Her privacy cannot be allowed to trump the public's interest in knowing more about whether she obstructed justice and lied to a federal grand jury. I mean, hello, this woman is running for the president of the United States. Her privacy, I mean, to show that
you kind of give up your privacy, you give up a lot of it for sure.
Absolutely.
When you decide to run for public office. All right, and the more public and the higher the office, the more privacy that you're going to wind up surrendering. And that just goes with the territory.
I can't believe how much they're protecting her. Either they're aware of all Friends of Bill's. Remember the FOBs, Friends of Bill's, that didn't have a nice life? You know, they either went missing, died, or whatever.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I just can't imagine how they're protecting this person to the degree that they are. I mean, with their problems with Benghazi, with their problems with the email server, I mean, with everything else. And, you know, it's
you
like
can almost
history.
Bet, though, that that document is now in high demand. Nobody even heard about it or thought about it for 20 years. And somebody said, I think there's a draft indictment for Hillary. I wonder if we could lay hands on it. That document is now in high demand, and we can wonder if there are digital copies of it. You can almost bet that the hackers are going to find a way to release a copy. It's going to be interesting to see if they can keep that document concealed for the next 12 months. You know, can they do it?
I don't know. They sure
I don't
have,
either.
They sure have protected her, and I guess she goes in front of, you know, tomorrow. And gets questioned. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And I think how it plays out tomorrow will give you an idea whether they'll be able to not only cover up the cover-up, but cover up the indictment. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. And it's just another sign of the times, as you say, another leaf in the breeze. And it just shows the direction that this country is headed. And there are no good outcomes. Another interesting article I saw, Al, was Britain. Now get this, Britain will be China's partner of choice in the West. This is what, I mean, those are interesting words. Prime Minister David Cameron declared Wednesday as China demonstrated its commitment by putting down a £6 billion, that's $9.3 billion stake in the UK's first nuclear power plant since the 1980s. The Chinese president signed the nuclear agreement on the second day of a four-day tour, and that the two countries agreed more than £30 billion, which is $46 billion in business deals. Cameron said the historic agreement would create 25,000 jobs and eventually provide power to 6 million homes. But you really have to wonder, why would you want China building your power plants to at any time they could just get off the switch? I mean, but this nuclear deal is going to see the new Hinkley Point, which is interesting because that's the guy who shot Reagan's the last name. But the nuclear deal will see the new Hinkley Point in southwest England built jointly by Britain and the China state-owned General Nuclear Power Corporation. And, of course, there are concerns about the security, about cybersecurity, and the people aren't happy with it, but it's interesting to see that, and it's going to be interesting to see what else develops between these two countries. $46 billion for, you know, businesses that they've agreed to, but also about low emission versions of their cab and their London bus. And I'm thinking to myself, China can't even control their own, you know, emission problems and environmental problems. And yet now they're going to help the UK, but they will probably manufacture the vehicles in China.
Well, you know, one of the changes you can expect in England, you know, when they have fish and chips, now they're going to get fish and chips and a fortune cookie.
Well, I mean, this is a big deal, Al, because now China's, you know, it's not the U.S.
No, I know.
It's not Britain's partner of choice. It's China.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. And you have to wonder, it can't be that China has technical expertise. Well, it shouldn't be that China has superior technical expertise in building nuclear power plants. But it may be that in the midst of our financial problems, Britain doesn't have the money to build the nuclear power plant. The United States maybe doesn't have the money to lend
right.
them to do it. And so they're going to hire China to do the job, or at least bring them in, because China is essentially, well, they may be essentially buying work by putting up the money to get the plant completed. So, you know, it's speculation on my part. I don't know that to be absolutely true, but I think that's why it's really strange. It's as strange as if Israel had decided to do business with Syria to build a new nuclear power plant in Israel. It would be politically surprising. They say politics makes strange bedfellows, but this is really unusual. So we'll watch and see.
And you're right about the money. I mean, at one point in time, it was the countries. I mean, it's just like the United States. They would devise some sort of, you know, like the transportation bill, or, you know, during the Depression, they created, you know, all these, you know, infrastructure jobs. I mean, certainly our infrastructure is so poor right now. I mean, it could create thousands of jobs, but we don't have the money to do it. And you would have to think that Britain is the same. They don't have the money to create their own programs, to fix their infrastructure, to create their own jobs. So they're going into partners with the communist country, and with all the woes and problems that that will create, you know, in the future. And I guarantee you there will be problems.
Yeah, of course there will be. You know, one of the problems is this. China is going to take a profit off that power plant. And they can sit around and say this is going to create several thousand new jobs and the rest of that sort of thing. Well, that's nice. But I'm going to make you a bet that before you're done, China will take enough profit off of that power plant to actually do some damage to the British economy. And part of the reason for that, talk about it once in a while, there is a concept called the multiplier effect, where people understand that when tourists, for example, come to your town and they spend $1,000, your town's community, your town's economy, your local economy actually gets a boost by the equivalent of $3,000 to $7,000. The tourists spend $1,000, but it stimulates the economy by $3,000 to $7,000. It has to be a zero sum equation, and what I mean by that is if bringing in $1,000 to Dallas, Texas stimulates the economy by, say, $5,000. When that $1,000 was pulled out of a bank account in Chicago to come down here to Dallas, it also diminished the Chicago economy by $3,000 to $7,000. Now, where I'm going with this is, if you sell your corporations to foreign investors, they're going to take the money, they take $1,000 out of your local economy and profits, but you're going to lose $3,000 to $7,000. It'll be an invisible loss. No one will know where it went. It won't show up on the books, but under the multiplier effect theory, you're going to take 3 to 7 times as much money as will be lost from your your local economy in terms of economic activity. And my point is that if they're going to do business with China and give them profits, the Chinese will be taking profits, and the net loss will be far more than shows up on the books. It'll be dangerous.
And you're right. The British government agreed to underwrite $2 billion in the pounds, that's $3.1 billion in dollars, in Chinese financing to secure the deal, and has guaranteed the plant's owners, Chinese, a minimum power price for 35 years.
Yeah.
So, hey, if the people can't pay those prices, so the people of Britain are the ones that will...
Of course. They're being sold out is what's happening.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, we're going to create some extra jobs. Yeah, we're going to create extra jobs. We're going to have jobs for the illegal aliens. We'll have jobs for everybody before we're done. But you aren't going to make more than a couple pounds per hour doing these jobs.
And I expect deals, I would expect deals like this coming to the U.S.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We were talking about Britain entering into a deal with China to build a new nuclear power plant in Britain. And Melody pointed out that part of this deal is that Great Britain has guaranteed that China will be able to charge a certain minimum amount of money for whatever, however many kilowatts it provides, for the next 35 years. They're guaranteed you're going to get X number of dollars or pounds for however many kilowatts they provide. I don't know whether that's a good deal or bad deal. I haven't seen the details. But it makes me think that if you're in a world where someone is guaranteeing minimum prices for 35 years, it's not clear that they're expecting inflation. Now, it may be the price they've guaranteed minimum. Prices could go up if there's inflation or whatever. But it's kind of a clue that maybe they expect prices for energy to decline over the next 35 years. Not necessarily proof, not necessarily, but a little bit of evidence raises that suspicion. So, well, we're going to guarantee you're going to get 5 pounds per kilowatt or whatever they charge. I have no idea. That means maybe China's thinking, you know, price energy is going down. And that what that does is lead up to, here's another story from the AFP, which is French press. And the headline is Gulf should adjust to new oil price reality. They're talking about the Middle East. Gulf economies need to adjust to the new reality of oil prices expected to remain low for some time, the International Monetary Fund says, recommending spending cuts and income diversification, and they're talking about the oil-producing nations in the Middle East. But the oil-rich monarchies remain in a strong position to make the necessary adjustments thanks to large financial reserves they've built up during the years of firmer prices. Now, all right, they got enough money in the bank where they can handle the loss of oil revenues at least for a while. Given that Saudi Arabia and OPEC agreed 40 years ago to sell their crude oil only for U.S. dollars, and thereby created the petrodollar, I'm going to assume that most of those large financial resources that remain in the vaults of the oil-producing countries, I'm going to guess that most of those large financial resources are denominated in U.S. dollars. If so, that means that some significant sum of U.S. dollars are about to come out of the oil producers' vaults and be spent into the global economy in order to stimulate local economies that will wind up going into the global economy. These newly released dollars should contribute to some degree of inflation. I don't know how much inflation. I don't know if it'll be significant or modest. But it might be, you know, it might be significant. The article continues, says, not only this year, but for the years to come, these countries will need to make an adjustment to better balance their spending to the new reality of oil prices. Again, this is from the IMF. Insofar as the IMF and others claim that the oil prices will remain low for the next several years, they imply that they don't expect the world economy to pick up steam anytime soon. Of course, one reason for low prices, oil prices in the future, may be the additional supply provided by Iran. Iran has been boycotted for, I don't know, 20 years or more. Now they're coming online. They're going to supply. They're going to increase the supply of available crude oil to the world. And as the supply goes up, we can expect the price to fall. And perhaps Iran is the primary reason why they're going to guessing that the price of oil will stay low for several years into the future. But even if Iran comes online, the stronger implication in my mind is that the IMF and others believe the global economy will remain in a recession or even a depression for several years, and during that time, global demand for crude oil, global demand for energy in general, and for crude oil in particular, will be so low that the price of crude oil will remain low. The article continues. It says the IMF report says oil exporters in the Middle East and North Africa will lose around $360 billion in oil revenues this year. Now, on the one hand, that's not such an enormous amount that translates into 4 or 5 months of quantitative easing, and quantitative easing 3 in this country at $80 billion a month. It's terminated, but they, you know, it's $360 billion isn't an enormous sum. On the other hand, the Middle East is not generally wealthy. And the point is that as the Middle East has less revenue because of the falling price of crude oil, there should also be more poverty. I know that Saudi Arabia is still going to be fine, but there'll be other countries that are going to be hurt by this, and they're going to put more people into poverty. And as we see more people in poverty, that poverty should be conducive to greater instability and perhaps more revolutions in the region. So you look at it and you see we have evidence here where people who are in positions of power who might know what they're talking about are implying the price of crude oil is going to go lower. And, you know, we worry about that in this country because it's going to affect our fracking industry, and some people think the fracking industry is going to just kind of wither for a while here, just maybe disappear. All right, it's going to hurt the oil production industry in this country because prices have dropped from $115 a barrel back a year ago or a year and a half ago down to $50 or $45 a barrel today. Yeah, it hurts our corporations, and that's cause for concern, but in the Middle East, that same price decline doesn't just hurt corporations. It's going to probably cause increased poverty in countries that are already severely impoverished, and people are already on edge, anxious, fearful, angry, ready to riot. So the implication, maybe, not necessarily, but maybe losing $360 billion in oil revenues this year, do you suppose it could cause another Arab Spring next year, Melody?
I believe all that we're seeing, all that these countries are experiencing, the distress, the is all sort of part of, you know, by a bigger design. I think that a lot of it has been created and agreed. I don't believe the Saudis lowered their oil prices. It might have been a part of it, but I don't think that was Russia was the main reason. And you have all these countries, and you're right, $360 billion. We have come to the point where $360 billion isn't a lot of money anymore. You know, we're becoming accustomed, and we've been conditioned to believe, you know, hey, a trillion here and a trillion there. You have to get up to even 20 trillion. Okay, that's our debt. Things seem to be going by okay. How many trillions of dollars does it take before it's
adds
it
up
makes
to real
a
money,
difference?
As Senator Dirksen used to say.
Yeah. So I think a lot of $360 billion in these areas is a huge amount of money. And I do believe a lot of what we're seeing there probably does have a lot to do with that. And, you know, perhaps that was part of the whole, part of the reason why you dropped the oil prices so low. I mean, anymore, I think it's just a multitude of things that we're seeing these things change. And it's, you know, every time you have an action, there's a reaction. So, you know, how does this, you know, I think we've lost sight of what the initial action was. And
I think we've also, I don't think we have a clue to what the reaction is going to be. People like myself can speculate that this might trigger another Arab Spring. That's just pure speculation. Maybe it turns out to be valid. Maybe not. I don't know. Probably not. Probably won't. All right. But it could be. But part of the point behind this is that we are in a world where it could happen. The price of crude oil is pushed down for whatever reason. And we could see, in theory, we could see the Middle East erupt into another Arab Spring. Could happen. We have a world that is so interconnected and so strange. You know, home economics is pretty easy to understand. You got X number of dollars coming in, you got X number of costs. How much money do you have left, if any? Do you have enough to put braces on Susie, or do you not have enough to put braces on Susie? When you go up to the state economics and then national economics, the whole thing becomes far more complex. Because there's way more room for lying and fibbing, and where the home economics are worried about, do we have enough money for Susie this month? We get into government, national economics, and we're talking about people trying to make predictions for what's going to happen years, decades into the future. And based on those predictions and assumptions, we can do A or we can do B. And if the predictions and assumptions are mistaken, our choice between A and B could be completely, that could also be mistaken. And the point on all of this is that we are in a world that is so complex and so beyond our experience that we really don't know what's going on. No one really is in control. We can only wonder how long this thing is going to hold together before something happens. That black swan event that people talk about, all of a sudden somebody's going to push a button and say, well, this should be all right. I think this will be okay. We'll just raise interest rates, or we'll lower interest rates, or we'll do something. And the next thing you know, you get a reaction that essentially travels around the globe. And the next thing, and we are suddenly in deeper doo-doo. Right, than we are already, and people are wondering why. And I'm not even sure. You know, we could have a big problem. It could break out tomorrow. Conceivable. I'm not saying it's going to, of course. But if a big problem really broke out tomorrow, is there anyone who could really look back a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, and say, here's what caused the problem? Does anyone really know? Could anyone really know? We could guess at it. There'll be people who say, well, I say it's such and such and such and such. It was because of a pluribus unum and ipso facto. And the crowd says, yay, you know, tell us more. But world is just weird and beyond, I think, beyond the comprehension of an ordinary, and not just an ordinary man, I think it's beyond the comprehension of an exceptional man or woman.
Well, people go, you know, we had the United States, you know, we made the agreement with the Saudis for the oil, for the petrol dollar and everything. Now you have the UK making agreements with China, and you have all these other countries, all these multinational trade agreements have been signed and pushed off and so forth. And it's like, it's almost like, oh yeah, you know, I mean, they're just doing whatever they can do. And I think there is total chaos that's going on. And
they're doing what they can do, but are they doing what they can understand?
No. And when we look at these lower oil prices, we know. Just last week we reported on how the banks, JP Morgan, Citi, Bank of America, they all had to raise their reserves because all of the loans that they have out on this based on the oil drilling and so forth, that they're ready for them all to default on all these loans. And so it's low prices. What did low prices for oil really do? It just destroyed countries.
It was supposed to stimulate economies. Low energy costs were supposed to make people
not
happy.
When you have that kind of a drop.
So I can go buy myself a flat screen TV.
Yeah, not when you have those huge, fast drops like we had, and it's not stimulating the economy at all.
Yeah, I know. So now
it's destroying the economies around
and
the world.
It may damage. That's right. It's not particularly stimulating the U.S. economy, and if it is, that stimulation is not obvious. It's perhaps preventing a collapse or a significant decline in the U.S. economy, but it's not adding to it in a way that is obvious or measurable. And in some foreign countries, again, like we're talking about with
it's the same thing, Al. You know, something goes down, the people should have much lower gasoline prices. You'd think it would stimulate that, but who's really making the money on the lower gasoline, on the lower oil prices? All your multinational corporations. Look at the airlines. Have you seen flights, the rates for flights drop? No, I went and I was looking at airline flights today. So you're looking at the numbers like, well, that's not a bad rate to go from here to here. Then when you start looking, it doesn't include your seat. You have to pay extra for your seat. So by the time you pay extra
another add-on?
For your luggage? If you have to put something underneath in the cargo area, heaven forbid, you know, you're paying, you know, $100. So your actual total airline ticket probably ends up to be $100+ more than what they sold it to you. So, I mean, and yet the gasoline prices, you know, they should be, you know.
Well, if the gas prices go down, so do the taxes on the gasoline, and we can't have that. Government makes revenue off the gasoline. They're probably, I don't know how much the price of gas is taxes right now, but I'm sure it's enough of a chunk where government doesn't want the price to go down. We're out of time, Melody. We got a break. We'll be back tomorrow. I want to thank all of you for listening. Until we return, hope the good Lord blesses you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy